This is Shala Stevenson, a volunteer reader at the Auto Reader Network, reading the second half of the Lions Club International magazine for summer 2026. I'm starting on page 31 of 60 pages. At the top of page 31 is the Lions International logo and the headline Mission Moment. Following that is a photo of about 20 people holding a white sign with the words Challenge Accepted on it. They're standing in front of a rock wall in an interior building. A label next to that says Larchmont Mamaroneck Lions Club. On the sidebar, a column starts with the headline, The Club's Five Tips for Growth. And then there's 5 points. Number one, partner with other community groups. Working together can help your club have a bigger impact and reach more people. Number two, promote your club. Share your story so others can see what your club does. Number three, use your club's strengths. Put your skills, connections, and resources where they can do the most good. Number four, listen to your community. Let local needs guide your service and shape your next steps. Number five, connect with schools. Projects like the Peace Poster Contest, scholarships, and KidSite screenings can help you build strong school partnerships. In reading the content in the middle of the page, the mission. Mission 1.5 is the drive to grow worldwide so we can better meet the growing needs of our communities and serve more people than ever before. Challenge accepted by Larchmont Mamaroneck Lions Club, Larchmont, New York, USA. Summary. The club has overcome membership challenges and today is thriving with 80 members. It continues to grow because of the connections it has built in the community. About the club. In the Roaring Twenties, Lions Clubs were popping up around the United States, and young men in Larchmont and Mamaroneck were quick to embrace the idea. Drawn by the promise of camaraderie and doing good deeds for others, a club was chartered in each town. The clubs grew and evolved over the decades, but as Lions aged and moved away, membership declined. And in 2005, the Larchmont Lions Club lost its charter. When Lion Jagardish Raoul, a past district governor from another district, moved to Larchmont in 2010, he led the charge to recharter the club. A few years later, when the Mamaroneck Lions Club in the neighboring town faced similar challenges, the Larchmont Lions invited them to join forces. Today, the Larchmont Mamaroneck Lions Club is 80 members strong. The club credits its success to relationships it has built across the community. Members have made a point to invite community leaders to join their club. And today, heads of many local service organizations, 4 regional school districts, and chambers of commerce are active members. In addition, they work closely with about 40 organizations to serve a wide range of community needs, including youth, hunger, refugees, the environment, and health-related causes. Having community leaders in the club is invaluable as they assess community needs and plan projects that will have the most impact. In addition, being connected to so many local organizations allows them to get involved with larger projects that support the community. Learn more about the mission at lionsclub.org/mission1.5. Page 32 starts with a big headline saying Q&A with Lion Stephanie Graff. This Michigan Lion is bringing human trafficking out of the shadows in her community and beyond. After receiving several invitations, Stephanie Graff finally said yes to joining the Chassel Lions Club in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. At first, she simply wanted to get more involved in her community. What she didn't expect was how naturally her work as an anti-human trafficking engagement specialist would connect with her experience as a lion. There's a photo of her in a navy blue suit and a name tag. The caption reads, Graff during Lions Day at the United Nations in New York City. On the next page, we get the questions and answers, starting with, how'd you get involved with your Lions Club? I was invited by a couple of my neighbors, one of them a 90-year-old longtime lion. I knew lions from growing up here, especially through our annual strawberry festival, but I hadn't thought much about it beyond that. I said yes because I love my community. How's your lion experience been so far? It's been incredibly rewarding. I've come to see just how much impact lions have, both locally and beyond. It's also been a great balance for me. The work I do in human trafficking is important but can be heavy. Being a lion gives me a way to focus on something positive while building local relationships. At what point did your lion life start to intersect with your professional life? When I first joined, I honestly didn't connect it to my work to combat human trafficking at all. But as club members became aware of the work I was doing, they were interested in learning more. That led to conversations and opportunities to raise awareness locally and eventually on a larger stage. In March, I had the honor of serving as a panelist at Lions Day at the United Nations in New York City. You've been working in the anti-human trafficking space for years. How did that begin? About 12 years ago, I met a survivor. That conversation changed everything for me. It opened my eyes to how prevalent human trafficking really is and how much of it is hidden in plain sight. I realized I couldn't go back to life as usual after that. Many assume human trafficking is only a problem in big cities or certain parts of the world. Is that accurate? No, not at all. Human trafficking is one of the fastest growing crimes in the world today, with cases reported in at least 188 countries. It's often cited as the second largest criminal industry after drug trafficking. Millions of people are being exploited for forced labor and commercial sex acts, and about 40% of them are children. Why is it so hard to recognize? Human trafficking doesn't always look like what people expect. It operates under the surface. It can involve manipulation, coercion, and control, sometimes without obvious signs. That's why education is so important. As I always say, knowledge is power. What are some of the warning signs we should be aware of? Signs to look for in both minors and adults include tattoos depicting symbols like crowns, barcodes, or the word daddy. They may appear nervous, malnourished, or sleep-deprived. They may lack control over their own ID or documents, be unable to speak for themselves, or be accompanied by a controlling person. In children, signs can include frequent school absences, dropping friends for older ones, new expensive clothing, multiple phones, inappropriate dress for weather conditions, and references to having to travel to other cities. What can we do to recognize and respond to potential human trafficking in our communities? I strongly encourage Lions worldwide to join this fight. There are many resources and trainings available to learn about this abhorrent practice, what it looks like, and how to respond. You may also consider getting involved with an organization in your area that's dedicated to this cause. United, we can win this fight. That completes the Q&A, but at the end of the article is a little card showing a person leaning against a wall with their head down and their knees up. The card reads, Human Trafficking Resources, United Nations Office on Drug and Crime, UNODC.org, National Human Trafficking Hotline, humantraffickinghotline.org. Page 32 starts with the words, Transforming Lives at Both Ends of the Leash. There's a photo of about 7 women wearing green pants and shirts and a yellow lab snuggled between them. The subtitle reads, Inside the Lions-Supported Prison Program, Raising Service Dogs and Creating New Beginnings, by Brett Armstrong. Page 33 is a photo of a larger group, all holding yellow lab puppies with yellow vests. When 3 wide-eyed puppies arrived at the Federal Correctional Institute, FCI, on a sunny spring day in Phoenix, 30 female inmates were eagerly awaiting to meet them. Everybody wants to get in on it, said Lion Chris Gerard, treasurer of the Lions Project for Canine Companions, LPCC, and the driving force behind the Arizona prison program. To participate, inmates must have a clean disciplinary records and complete a rigorous screening process. But for the women selected, the chance to cradle an 8-week-old Labrador puppy and do something meaningful with their time is more than worth it. The puppies are future service dogs for Canine Companions, a national organization that provides highly trained service dogs to adults, children, and veterans with disabilities at no charge. LPCC helped launch the Arizona program by connecting the facility with Canine Companions and providing the startup funding to get puppies through the door. Page 34. a team effort. Raising a service dog through the program is a unique partnership. Each puppy spends roughly 3 months with his incarcerated handler, then rotates for a month with a volunteer puppy raiser on the outside. The inmate establishes the foundation, grooming, routines, and basic skills, while working toward the 35 commands the dog will eventually learn. The outside raiser builds on these lessons while exposing the puppy to the environments it will navigate as a working service dog. Grocery stores, movie theaters, crowded sidewalks, and busy streets. It's a partnership built on mutual respect and a common goal. "I went in thinking, you respect me, I respect you," said Teresa Hart, LPCC's national administrator, who spent 7 years co-raising puppies with inmates at a Tennessee facility. "I wanted to work with them and with the dogs." A canine companions trainer visits the Arizona facilities at least twice a month, building skills gradually. By the time the puppy is 16 to 18 months old, it's ready for what the raisers affectionately call college. 6 months of professional training at the nearest Canine Companions campus. There's a photo of Roderick, a black lab puppy, and a drawing of a female inmate with a bun, nose to nose with a seated puppy. The final headline, a puppy raising timeline. In prison, an incarcerated handler provides a strong foundation with love, routines, and basic skills. An arrow points to the next step, outside exploration. A volunteer raiser exposes the puppy to environments it will navigate as a service dog. Page 35. A reason to do better. Fewer than 5% of program participants return to prison after they're released, a fraction of the national recidivism rates, but the numbers don't tell the full story. One young woman entered the program at California's Folsom Women's Fertility with a little direction and a family weighed down by shame. She left prison, earned a degree, and became an apprentice trainer for Canine Companions, building her career around the mission that gave her a second chance. So many of the program participants never had connection. No family, few relationships, Teresa said. This dog gave them purpose, gave them love, and gave them a reason to want to do better. Chris and her colleagues have received letters from participants that put it plainly. "It's the first time I felt unconditional love, and it's my chance to give back to society." There's a photo of a white lab named Tommy, and another photo of a lab seated in a playground or an obstacle course named Narish. At the bottom, the timeline continues with an arrow pointing to college. At 16 to 18 months, the puppy receives professional training at the nearest Canine Companions campus. Then another arrow points to the next step, the real world. The puppy becomes a working service dog and is matched with its person. Page 36 starts with a picture of another white lab puppy named Zando. So many of the program participants never had connection, no family, few relationships. This dog gave them purpose, gave them love, and gave them a reason to want to do better. Teresa Hart, LPCC National Administrator. The match. The program isn't just about producing highly skilled service dogs, though it does that remarkably well. Puppies raised in prison graduate into working service dogs at a rate 10% higher than those raised in traditional homes. The program is about changing lives for the better. After more than 6 months of professional training, Canine Companion trainers know each dog's strengths and temperament inside and out, and they use that knowledge to pair each dog with a person who needs them the most. For many recipients, it's a defining moment. One young boy, meeting his new service dog for the first time, said it best, "I've been waiting for him all my life." A new beginning. The intensive puppy raising program concludes with a formal graduation ceremony live streamed so the inmates who helped raise the puppies can watch. From a puppy raised beyond prison walls to a child whose life will never be the same, that's the power of this program. And it starts with Lions. "We want to make sure people know that Lions lead here," Chris said. "We've been there since the beginning." Page 37 starts with a drawing of a young boy kneeling down and touching noses with a fully grown dog wearing a service dog vest. The headline underneath the drawing says, "At a glance, the Lions Project for Canine Companions." 5.2 million raised for canine companions since 1983. 2,000 plus Lions clubs across 35 states participate. 300 plus incarcerated puppy raisers currently active. 33 puppies raised through the two Arizona facilities and counting. Less than 5% of program participants return to prison. 10% higher graduation rate for prison-raised puppies versus those raised in traditional homes. Learn more at lpcanine.org. Moving on the top of page 38 is a graphic of a passport, the word Lions on top, a globe in the middle with a heart on it, and the words Serving a World in Need underneath. Then there are graphics of some tickets and the title Service Around the World. Pennsylvania, USA. Twin Valley High School Leo Club. The Leos sent 5 care packages to sailors aboard the USS George H.W. Bush while the carrier was deployed in the Atlantic Ocean, packed with requested supplies such as trail mix, peanut butter, foot powder, and lip balm. The boxes also included handwritten notes of gratitude and encouragement. For sailors spending up to 11 months away from home, the packages offered a welcome reminder of the people supporting them. There's a photo of sailors receiving the packages next to that article. Quebec, Canada. Ormstown Lions Club. The Lions have been helping children in Quebec's Chateauguay Valley discover the joy of reading since 2015. Through their literacy program, members donate books, lead read-aloud visits, and set up reading tents in classrooms and libraries. The program has benefited children in daycares and elementary schools across the region and become a valued part of the community. There's a photo of 2 children inside a tent inside a library with 4 librarians surrounding them and holding a sign saying, "Lions love and read." Page 39 starts with the title, "Lions and Leos are serving the communities in nearly every country on Earth. Join us for a quick trip around the globe to check out some of their service." Georgetown, Guyana. Lions Club of Georgetown. The Lions donated 100 baby chicks to a Georgetown teenager, allowing him to start a small poultry business. With that support, he gained a first step into entrepreneurship and a way to build practical skills, experience, and income. And there's a very tall young boy with a box of baby chicks and being handed to him by a woman in a yellow Lions Club vest. Paris, France. Lions Club at Paris Arc de Triomphe. A club organized Soup de Chefs, a fundraiser to support La Locale, an organization that helps people facing financial difficulties access essential food items. Local restaurants donated their signature soups. Community members turned out in large numbers to buy them. Lions and Leos from nearby clubs and other volunteers helped out at the event, which was a huge success. And the photo shows 4 people wearing yellow vests behind a table stacked high with brown containers of soup, and a woman is purchasing one. Tokyo, Japan. Tokyo Shinjuku Lions Club. The club installed a lion-shaped piggy bank at the entrance to one of Tokyo's busiest railway stations. Coins and paper money trigger the sound of a lion's roar, adding a playful note to each donation. The statue raises about $2,000 each month to support local lions projects. This photo has pictures of people in suits and Lions Club vests flanking a gold lion statue. Tanahun, Nepal, Leo Club of Tanahun. The club distributed warm shoes to students in need, allowing them to stay comfortable and focused on their education during the winter season. The Leos cut back on their own lunch expenses in order to collect funds for the project. This small sacrifice became practical support where it was needed most. This photo has a large group of young people holding up white bags in a small village setting with buildings on either side and trees in the background. Page 41, Blacktown, Australia. Blacktown Ponds Lions Club Cubs. The Cubs, aged 13 and under, raised $2,000 Australian, about $1,400 US, for the Australian Lions Childhood Cancer Research Foundation. From sizzling sausages at the community barbecues to fundraising stalls at club events, the youngsters found creative ways to support childhood cancer research. That photo, it has two people sitting at a table holding bunny ear headbands, and it looks like they're about to do some face painting. Cairo, Egypt. Cairo Golden Pharaohs Lions Club. The Lions helped a local student and textile worker receive a corneal transplant that restored her vision. Working with the Al Noor Wal Amal Association, which supports blind women through education and opportunity, and the Cairo Elite Lions Club, they helped make the surgery possible. The procedure allowed the young woman to continue her work and studies. As a picture of four women standing in an office with the rugs as a background. The end of page 41 wraps up with Service the World Counts On. These are just a few of the many stories showcasing the positive impact Lions are making globally. From helping one person in need to helping an entire community, each and every act of service matters. Be sure to report your activities each month so we can effectively measure our impact, grow our membership, and share our stories with the world. Visit lionsclub.org/service-reporting to learn more. Page 42 starts with the headline, Fastened for the Future. Subhead reads, The Accra Golden Lions Club equips children with life jackets for a safer journey to school. By Natasha De Lorera. There's a photo of four dark-skinned young boys wearing life jackets in front of a canoe next to the water. Page 43. Oh, there's more young boys laughing next to boats in the water. There must have been a spread. At first light on Padia Torcope Island in East Ghana, parents walk their children to the muddy banks of the Volta River. No yellow buses wait here. Instead, small wooden boats line the shore, ready to carry students to the school on the mainland. Children 4 to 15 pile into the narrow vessels, some with motors, others steered by hand. When families cannot afford a motorized ride or an adult to row, children must paddle themselves across the water. The crossing takes about 20 minutes each way. On the river, the children sit quietly. Sometimes they sing softly to pass the time, but more often they stay focused on reaching the other side. They know the risk, and their parents do too. From late April into November, high water and strong currents make the crossing more dangerous. Some children have fallen into the river, and not every child knows how to swim. There have been no confirmed drownings of the Diakor-Kope children, but fatal capsizes everywhere else along the river have claimed lives in recent years. Still, they go. Without school, young people in Padia Corcope have a few options beyond fishing, selling the day's catch, or harvesting clams. Parents live with that fear because school may offer something different. Each morning, as the boats pull away from the bank, some parents stay and wave until their child disappears from sight. Others cannot bear to watch. As we made our way across the river, I thought, this boat could overturn and I could lose my life. Imagine experiencing that every day. Lion Nimaha Yilu Atiga. There's photos of women standing next to the shore with boats in the background, a man carrying bundles of sticks. I think the women might be doing laundry. And then another group of young children, bright yellow and orange life jackets with the words donated by Accra Golden Lions Club written on the back. They're hugging an adult man gathered around them. He's wearing glasses. The caption reads, Students express their gratitude to Lion Nimaha Ilu Agate. 50 miles and a world away, The effort to make the crossing safer began in Accra, Ghana's capital. Members of the Accra Golden Lions Club, a 58-member group chartered in 1992, saw a local television report about children making the daily river commute and couldn't forget what they had seen. For club president Nimaha Yilu Akate, the images hit close to home. He thought of his young son and the safety of his own morning routine. "Imagine your child has to get into a wooden boat to cross a river every day," Agata said. "No parent should have to wonder if their children made it to school." Determined to help, the Lions set out to buy life jackets for students and Pita Kope, but first they needed to raise the money. They organized a car wash, and with the help of local Leos, they spent the day scrubbing cars with buckets of soap and water and spray wands, bringing in as much as they could for the project. A little less fear. On delivery day, Agata and his fellow Lions and Leos left Accra at sunrise with the life jackets. To reach the island community, they traveled the same route the children take each day to school. They rode in a motorboat, wearing borrowed life jackets. Even then, Agata was afraid. "As we made our way across the river, I thought this boat could overturn and I could lose my life," he recalled, imagining experiencing that every day. By the time they reached Pita Torkope Island, students in orange and brown school uniforms were already waiting. The brightly colored life jackets stood out against the dusty ground as the Lions and Leos unpacked them. The children slipped them on as buckles were fastened and straps were pulled tight. Then came the hugs, a reflection of their immense gratitude. Nearby, parents watched, quiet and smiling. With a life jacket wrapped around his small frame, Tete, 10, who dreams of becoming a teacher, was not thinking about the journey ahead, but about his mother. "Now my mother doesn't have to cry or be afraid when I go to school." Page 48. In My Own Words, My Surprise Induction, by Lion Leanne Liston. I share the story of my Lions induction often, partly because it's pretty comical, but mostly because it shaped who I am today. Even though I grew up around Lions, I never realized it was an international organization. To me, it was just the club my parents and friends all were in. I helped when I could, and mostly saw it as time to hang out with family. I figured once I was older and settled down, then maybe I'd join. But life doesn't always go as planned. This page starts with a picture of a woman with long brown hair, wearing a yellow cape, a purple shirt with an eye on it, yellow shorts, and black tights. A second photo shows that same woman sitting on the ground and hugging a child in a school uniform. Page 49 starts with more photos. The same woman wearing a yellow jacket, a Lion's vest, standing in front of a Lions Club banner with people on either side of her. Another photo of her and an older man with white hair wearing a yellow capes and Lions Club shirts. And finally, a photo of Brianne holding up a phone that's showing people, young children with dark skin, something on their phone. They're all gathered around her. In the parking lot, my dad threw me a yellow vest and said, "Come on, you're being inducted." When I was 19, my dad invited me to a Lions dinner. Free food? Hanging out with my parents and adopted grandparents? Yes, please. What I didn't know until we pulled up to the venue was that this Lions dinner was actually a district convention, and my family's club was hosting it. In the parking lot, my dad threw me a yellow vest and said, "Come on, you're being inducted." The evening flew by and was honestly kind of a blur, but I remember leaving excited and feeling like I had a world of possibilities in front of me. Granted, the voluntold route wasn't the best recruitment method, and the chaos of the day was wild, but from that moment on, I decided to embrace the experience and say yes to every opportunity I could. Who knew that one day, my induction day, would open the door to a life of adventure, a Lions family that welcomed me, and a real way to put good back into the world? Who knew it would help shape my future in such a meaningful way? A decade later, I still get chills when I see new members get inducted. It takes me right back to the moment I became a lion and to this amazing path I never saw coming. In italics, after the article, reads, Brianne Liston is a member of the Salina Lions Club in Utah, a Melvin Jones Fellow, and holds the Lions International Faculty Development Institute, FDI, graduate training credential. Page 50 starts with a picture of a woman standing in a sports stadium, clapping hands, wearing a yellow Lions Club shirt. She has dark skin and cornrows, wearing sunglasses. The headline reads, The Intersection of Service and Inclusion. LCIF and Special Olympics Celebrate 25 Years of Partnership, by Shelby Washington. Page 51 is the other half of that photo. A man with dark skin, short cropped hair, wears an orange Lions Club shirt, which has a medal draped over it. At the top of the page, it says 25 years. There's the Lions Club logo, Lions Club International Foundation words, and the Special Olympics logo, and the words Special Olympics. Page 52. Our most impactful partnerships are born from the inherent belief that lions can make a difference, and that the slogan, where there's a need, there's a lion, can be lived out repeatedly all over the world. Lions perceive community needs from a grassroots level that they believe can be successfully addressed through ambitious vision and hands-on service. 25 years ago, Lion Dr. Paul Berman saw a need and founded the Lions Club International Foundation, LCIF, Special Olympics Opening Eyes Program. It was the first ever vision care curriculum for eye care professionals to establish best practices in the effective treatment of individuals with intellectual disabilities. By offering vision screenings for Special Olympic athletes, eye care professionals gained hands-on experience and athletes received high-quality care for free. There's a montage of pictures at the bottom of this page. People playing volleyball or learning how to serve a volleyball, people with dodgeballs, people doing dance moves, and a doctor doing an eye exam. Dr. Berman's dream of improving access to vision care for people with disabilities has been realized in more than 475,500 screenings and 281,000 free prescription eyeglasses for Special Olympics athletes. Since 2013, Special Olympics and LCIF have expanded the partnership to include areas of global collaboration beyond vision. Over the years, LCIF has awarded more than $30 million to Special Olympics for activities that include opening eyes, unified sports, motor activities training programs, unified with refugees and athlete leadership, family health forums, youth activation, and so many more, said LCIF Chairperson A.P. Singh. We have invested in a partnership that has expanded our vision for inclusion, provided a platform for Lions and Leos to serve alongside Special Olympics athletes and their families, and broadened access to community services for those who need them most. More than 23,000 Lions and Leos have volunteered with Special Olympics since our partnership began. Through the extensive partnership activities, Special Olympics athletes and staff have been inspired to join Lions and Leos clubs and made a difference in their local communities. At Special Olympics, we are grateful to have such an impactful global partnership with the world's largest, most active, and most inclusive service organization in the world, said Special Olympics CEO David Evangelista. Many associations support individuals with intellectual disabilities as beneficiaries of service, which we as a movement greatly appreciate. What makes Lions Clubs International unique is the focus on engaging this population to become agents of service, bringing their talents and abilities to the community as Lions. I believe it is at this intersection of service and inclusion that we are changing the world. Page 54 starts with the headline, Lion Magazine Time Machine, 2026 to 1952. Full speed ahead. 1952 marked a fresh start for much of the world. In the years following World War II, communities were rebuilding with purpose and pride, TV was beginning to flicker to life in more homes, highways were expanding, and innovation was quietly transforming daily life. A strong sense of determination was in the air as people focused on creating opportunities for the future. Here's a look at what Lions were up to during this period of renewal. Lions in Weldon, North Carolina, install a new road sign. Black and white photo of the Lions Club logo on a road sign, and people, men in hats, standing next to a new installation. Another black and white photo titled, "The Mission City and District Lions Club in British Columbia distribute lighting kits to make bicycles more visible at night." And there's a group of families with baskets with lights being installed by mechanics in caps. A couple demonstrates a traditional Mexican dance during the 35th annual Lions International Convention in Mexico City. A man with a hat and a woman with a color with a embroidered blouse and skirt are dancing together in a black and white photo. The Edwardsville Lions Club in Pennsylvania hosts a 3-day garbage collection after borough pickup services were discontinued. And five men, are standing around a sign that says Edwardsville Cleanup, holding big baskets filled with rags and such. Lion highlights. Over 9,500 Lions clubs with nearly 450,000 members were serving across 38 countries. More than 13,000 Lions attended the 35th annual Lions International Convention in Mexico City, Mexico. Harold P. Nutter, Oakland, New Jersey, served as international president for 1951-52, and Edgar M. Elbert, Addison, Illinois, took over for the 1952-53 term. The photo next to that text reads, "The Lions Eye Clinic in Ohio provides classes for 3-year-old triplets." And there are indeed 3 very small children wearing glasses and an older man sitting on a bench next to them. There's the next photo, says Manila Lions Club in the Philippines donates a radio car to the police department. A lot of people wearing white shirts and ties are standing next to a car with the title Manila Police Force, donated Manila Lions. Next photo's caption reads, "Yokohama Lions celebrate becoming the first club in Japan." And there are men standing around a Lions Club icon with the words Yokohama, Japan underneath it. The next photo reads, "The Brownsville Lions Club in Texas becomes the first club to own an organized baseball team." And the black and white photo features the sign, "Lions Field, home of Brownsville Charros," and people coming and going through a gated entrance. Page 56 starts with a picture of a person holding a seed or a rock, I can't tell, with the Lions Club logo on it and the words, "Thank you for your help," on top of it, but it's seems to have somewhat eroded off. The headline on this page reads, "Parting Shot." A sure thing. On a visit to Goodrington Sands in Pageton, Southeast England, Carol Franklin was searching for sea glass and pottery when something unusual caught her eye. At first she thought it might be a dog toy, but after brushing away the sand, she realized it was a wooden egg bearing a familiar symbol, the Lions International emblem. She was excited to show it to her partner, Lion Nick Legg, a member of the Clevedon Lions Club, which is based about 80 miles up the coast. But how had the egg ended up on the beach? They turned to club secretary Glenn Hill to investigate. Hill posted the photo on Facebook, and a few days later, the answer came in. The wooden egg was one of more than a dozen left undiscovered after the Pageton Lions Club's annual Easter egg hunt. Weeks after the holiday, the egg was still doing exactly what it was meant to do, bringing a little joy to the shore. Page 57 seems to be the last page of the publication. It looks like it's the inside cover. It lists the Alliance International staff, executive officers, international directors, and first-year international directors. Next to that, there's a picture of spring blossoms and the title 109th Lions International Convention, July 2nd through 6th, 2027, Washington, D.C. We're bringing the spirit of service to Washington, D.C. Join Lions and Leos from around the world in celebrating our service and shaping what comes next. Register today. There's a QR code, but no URL. And the final page is the outside cover of a very green field. This concludes our reading of the Lions Club International magazine, the summer 2026 edition. This is a publication of Lions International, whose mission is to empower Lions Clubs, volunteers, and partners to improve health and well-being, strengthen communities, and support those in need through humanitarian service and grants that impact lives globally and encourage peace and international understanding. This reading is brought to you by the Audio Reader Network. Visit reader.ku.edu or our listener website, audioreader.net, for more information.